Hey, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of No Filter Sports Podcast. Bob Page in the host chair today. Mr. Z is off. I'm joined by one of the great stars of mid-Michigan media, Fred Heumann up there, having shoveled out his driveway, from my understand now, and able to come outside the house again. And we're both in turn, along with our producer-director, Brandon McAfee, joined by the hero of Fred's and my teenage years, Major League Baseball's last 30-game winner, Denny McClain. Does it sound to you, Denny, that that's like part of your formal name now? Instead of Dennis Dale McClain, it's like Major League Baseball's last 30-game winner, Denny McClain.
I don't know. But I got a question for Fred first.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Did you really have to plow or shovel your snow?
I wasn't sure what he was referring to.
My daughter says they got snow on the ground in Detroit.
Well, I'm in Lansing, and they had no snow here.
Yeah, we had a little bit of snow, but nothing.
The car hood was covered by a little snow one morning.
That's all.
But there really hasn't been any accumulation, and there's been no shoveling. Although I did hear in the Detroit area that there was some shoveling. But
yeah, as I said, my daughter says in Farmington Hills in suburban Detroit, they got snow on the ground. As George Kell would ask, where he's still with us, what's the temperature?
Temperature. By the way, I'm done shoveling. I retired from shoveling. I don't want to shovel.
That's heart attack stuff. How cold was it this morning in Lansing?
20 something.
I haven't been out yet.
Yeah. You don't even think about it.
No. I wake up and I do the podcast and then I start my day.
Well, the weather's got nothing to do with what's happened in Ann Arbor with a cancellation. That's just the latest COVID-19 cancellation, as everybody knows. Michigan was supposed to play Maryland this weekend. And after moving all football activities virtual earlier in the week, now they're not going to play. Michigan won't even be able to get back on the practice field till this coming Monday. Ohio State is in East Lansing, supposedly, to play Michigan State. That game, as we record this Thursday morning, is still on, but who knows? Ryan Day is not going to coach that game. Ohio State needs to play so they can get enough games in to qualify for the Big Ten Championship. But perhaps you guys saw this, the Big 14, I should say, athletic directors. It looks like they're going to consider tweaking this rule because of Ohio State's situation. Wisconsin athletic director, former football coach Barry Alvarez, who chaired the conference's return to play committee, says they're going to have to revisit this whole thing and find some way to make Ohio State eligible, no matter how few games they wind up playing. In other words, boys, they got a mess. It continues.
Well, if they don't have Ohio State in this, they got a real problem because people are paying lots of money to buy spots for this tournament. And you know that, and you just named a couple, but Texas A&M, Arkansas, the Steelers, possibly Houston and SMU, Michigan and Maryland, Richmond, all these teams are not playing this weekend.
The Steelers played yesterday, unless you misspoke right there. They played on Wednesday afternoon, as we know.
I meant to say something about the COVID. It's amazing that they played. Yeah. The other day, with all of the things that happened in 4 or 5 days to the Steelers and the Ravens, it was hard for me to believe they were out there playing. And you know, in anybody who saw the game saw how sloppy the game was.
Terrible.
Really, really bad.
Yeah, that and the fact, and in fact, the Ravens players were very outspoken after the game, including Robert Griffin III, RG3, who said, "I have never had a hamstring injury in my life." But we had no practice. We had walkthroughs that were even slower than normal walkthroughs. We didn't have a full practice. And in this case, there were a number of Ravens players who were injured. I believe, and I watched the game because I had nothing else to do on a
We all watched the game because none of us had anything else to do.
Probably had great viewership. Anyway, you saw a number of Ravens players go out, and they said afterward they were outspoken. They think it's due to the lack of practice. So in this case, I think the NFL erred and jammed one in just to get it in. And I don't think it was right. I don't think the Ravens should have been forced to play on that day. And probably wherever they played Pittsburgh at this time, they're going to get clobbered. In fact, they made it a very competitive game, which surprised me.
Yeah.
But the number of players who went out with injuries and the lack of cohesion they had without any practices, football, any coach will tell you, Thomas Wilcher is going to come on with us today. He's a high school coach. Any coach at any level will tell you football, maybe more than any other sport, is a need for practice.
Yes.
For repetition, for some kind of preparation for a game. And when you don't have, virtually they had none. And in that regard, I think Roger Goodell should have stepped up and canceled that game.
And by the way, you can compare football to flying an airplane. You need a lot of repetition before you start landing that plane by yourself.
Yeah, the risk is a little higher in an airplane.
A little bit, yeah.
Says the former pilot himself.
That's what I was going. What
an abomination this thing was. And fellas, they showed the overhead shots of Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. It was totally empty. And once again, this COVID-19 thing, as serious as it is so politicized wherever you go. Pennsylvania has a liberal Democrat for a governor.
It's got nothing to do with it, Bob.
Oh, yes, it does, Denny.
No, Bob, it doesn't.
Listen to me.
Listen to me. Don't go there. No.
So there's nobody at that game.
Because I'm going to go on for an hour if you're going to start this.
So, Denny, I'm just stating facts. So there's nobody at that game. Whereas in the state of Florida, run by a Republican governor, Ron DeSantis, there are no limits on the number of spectators now that can attend any game. Freddie, I know you're with me on this. It seems politicized.
Wait a minute, Bob. And then yesterday they had a record for the most COVID cases that they've had.
That got nothing to do with it.
Oh, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. I'm just saying this is about whether fans can go to games.
If you put 50,000 people in a bowl, nobody's going to get sick.
Not going there, Denny. That's not what I'm talking about.
Well, that's what it sounds like.
And then they had the phony crowd noise they piped in, which made it difficult to hear the announcers. Yeah. Then Mike Tirico, how fitting was this? So Mike Tirico throws it down to Michelle Tafoya to open the game on the sidelines. Michelle looks like she also, like Susie Colbert, if you know what I mean, is facially in the federal witness protection program. She starts to talk and her mic fails. How fitting is that? And you're talking about the refereeing in that game, how they essentially stole a touchdown away from Baltimore in the final seconds of the half. Even the referee commentators said they were piling on, deliberately keeping the Baltimore runner down. You know, and people say, well, why were they playing in the afternoon? Because NBC had what on at night? Here in New York,
Christmas tree
Rockefeller
lighting.
Christmas tree lighting.
The Christmas tree lighting.
You would have thought they could have outsourced that game to the NFL Network so they could have played it, you know, at 8 o'clock at night instead of taking away from Secret Storm or As the World Turns or whatever soap operas are running in the afternoon.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't move that unless it was a money thing to another network.
Yeah.
I figured among these times, amidst these times, that all bets are off. And to play a game on a Wednesday at 3:30 in the afternoon, but really we're varying from the point. That game should not have been played, no matter what time. And I haven't said this a lot about COVID. All right, I've been the moving force between try to play the games as long as people can stay safe, but safe doesn't mean just COVID. Okay, safe also means your personal injury risk, non-COVID. And I thought they put the Ravens at risk in a non-COVID sense with all the players they had hurt. And I'll say it again, in football, if you can't practice, you can't play a game, and they shouldn't have played that game.
Did you see what happened with the Steelers? They called it, their own coach called us the JV team for Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw.
And with all those guys out for Baltimore, as you said, sloppy. And may I see a show of hands, please, from those who actually knew, because Lamar never comes out, and we don't see the Baltimore Ravens every week, obviously, that RG3 was still in football and the backup quarterback. And how about the great, he was great at Penn State. How about Trace McSorley? Gee, whatever happened to that kid? He was so good. Oh, he's with Baltimore, too, and even he got into the game.
Yeah, I knew RG3 was there. I did not know Trace McSorley was there. I kind of forgot about him.
Yeah,
but the level of play in that game was not up to standards. And I don't know what the motivation was to make sure they got that game in. It was scheduled for last Thursday night, got postponed to Sunday, to Monday, to Tuesday, and finally decided on a Wednesday afternoon, and they had to put in the afternoon because a Christmas tree was being lit. The whole thing just begs for, we want to keep this, we want to play our 256 games, and damn it, we're going to play them no matter what. And
look at the alternative. We just went over the Ohio State situation where college football isn't operating that way. Is that better then that Ohio State is not going to qualify for the Big Ten championship game? We don't think. Is that what's better?
You know what?
What's
maybe there's a real good reason why they don't step back and take an extra week or two to play the entire season. And maybe there's a reason that I don't understand it, because that's what I thought this was all about. you have so many players sitting in the dugout and the rest of them are on the field playing. And then if somebody gets sick or somebody gets hurt, you replace them. I don't know whatever happened to that concept, because that was the concept in the beginning.
Whatever they was going to be criticized. Go ahead.
I think Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren kind of put himself in a corner here by waiting so long to start this season.
Yes.
Because they don't have enough time to finish it. They could have been playing 2 weeks before they were. He wanted to cancel the season. He didn't want to play it. And lo and behold, he thought others would follow suit. And instead, the other conferences decided they're going to play. And then Warren, in his first year as commissioner, had egg on his face. And so to avoid embarrassment, he said, by golly, we're going to play too. Couching it with some ridiculous stuff about how we've gone all through all safety protocols. Now we've done the studying, we've talked to doctors, and now we can start our season. BS. They started their season because everyone else was playing, because he was dead set on not playing the season. And now they have this mess. Now you talk about Michigan and Ohio State coming up next week. Kirk Herbstreit, the analyst for ESPN and former Ohio State quarterback, came out publicly, and I was going to bring this up today before I even heard that. What about the speculation that Michigan, which can't beat Ohio State on the field, that's been clear during the Harbaugh years, would now cost Ohio State the championship by saying they cannot play that game next week against the Buckeyes?
Or how about taking it a step further, Fred, that they don't want to play that game because they're going to get beat 82-0?
That's the point.
Well, that's the other point. But the inference by Herbstreit was that Michigan could really stick it to their arch rival by keeping them out of the Big Ten championship game, by not being able to play that game. And Ward Manuel, the AD of Michigan, went nuts on Herbstreit, called him a fool, said, we've been playing football since 1878. We have more victories than any Division I program in the country. That's what we do here, is play football. And Herbstreit eventually apologized. But I was going to bring it up as speculation, not an accusation.
Right.
But what a way for Michigan to stick it to Ohio State.
Yeah, but then Denny and Brandon, the way he wimped out, he goes on social media on Tuesday night to clarify the statement. And after the predictable outcry from Michigan fans as well. And he says, I had no business. This is a quote. I had no business at all saying that.
You're talking about Herbstreit. Yeah, you're talking about Herbstreit.
Yeah, it was completely unfair to the University of Michigan, to Jim Harbaugh. Show some balls, Herbie. You said it. Own it. Don't back down. But you see, if I offended anybody, I'm so sorry. How often do we see that?
I think somebody got to him. I think somebody outside of Michigan got to him.
Yeah, right away they worry about money, and it always gets down to money, but it does get down to money. If you say something, if you say something way out of in right field, you got a problem with it, with the administration of the networks and or anybody else. But
it comes down to Herbie's money, because again, if you're that critical, and he has been in the past, you got a chance to lose your high paying job as the face of college football in
That's
this country, probably
about.
Along with Chris Fowler. Yeah. So guys, consider this question. You're Jim Harbaugh right now. Do you want to end your career at Michigan, which surely is going to happen after this season? Do you want to end your career going out winless versus Ohio State? Or would you rather risk playing this game and getting your ass kicked on national TV, as I just suggested facetiously, 82-0? Which is it?
Well, Ryan Day said in the spring that we want to go for 70 on them, and I think they got a chance to do it, Bob. I think they got a chance to do it. I think this is going to intensify the rivalry, and that opens the speculation for why Michigan might not want to play the game, because I think there's a good chance that Ohio State's going to go for 75 or 80 against Michigan if they play that game next week.
Okay, so answer my question. If you're Harbaugh, what do you want to do?
Well, here's
my
question.
You want to play it and take a chance on that, or do you want to try to beat them?
But here's my question. Is there any upside for Michigan? You know you can't beat them.
I never think quitting and not playing a game.
I want to play the game. No question about it. And if he wouldn't play the game, they'd fire him before the first quarter started.
Well, it wouldn't be Harbaugh's call. It would come above that. But Yeah, I don't think I want to finish my career with the kind of season they had and then not playing the last two games. And I understand, Bob, I think your question is legitimate. I don't have an answer, but I think there's a good chance that Ohio State could go for 70 or 75 that day. And I think they're good enough and Michigan's bad enough right now for that to happen. So it's an interesting quandary, an interesting question, but I would like to think you would rather at least try to play the game. You never know what might happen.
Well, Michigan State has no choice if Ohio State can play. And we could be talking about, obviously, the same thing, an 82-0 ass-kicking in East Lansing this weekend. Do you think, Fred, covering the program as closely as you do, that is a possibility? How much do you think Michigan State has improved after upsetting Northwestern last weekend? And what do you think their mindset is going into this game?
Well, I think the two quality wins they have, which are high quality, and the confidence they gained from winning that game over Northwestern last week, and the fact that they are somewhat coming together doesn't allow me to put Michigan State in the conversation for giving up 75 or 80 against Ohio State. But that said, they're not going to beat them. They might lose by 3 or 4 touchdowns, but I think Michigan State has a pulse right now, and I don't think Michigan does.
Danny, how much difference do you think it makes if this guy, young guy, is one of the great coaches in America, and bad news for Michigan and Michigan State fans, he ain't going away. If Ryan Day, well, he's not going to coach against Michigan State, how much would or could that make, how much difference would or could that make in a game?
No, I don't think in one game. It's like they said about Saban last week. Of course, it was a little different then because Saban late in the week contacted the COVID, but Saban may not be coaching the game, but his system and his preparation still goes into the game. And in a certain degree, I think Ryan Day, while he may not be at practices and whatnot, his footprint and his staff is in line with preparing this team for the game.
It's his team.
The fact that he won't be on the sidelines on game day is to me more incidental than it is consequential. I mean, I don't think it's a big factor.
And it's not going to cost him a ball game. That we all know. I mean,
Amos,
he doesn't have to be there to win it. Yeah.
Ohio State has a coaching staff, and they'll be prepared. And, yeah, they'd rather have their head coach there. Who's kidding who? But, the preparation and the system is in place, and I don't think the lack of him being on the sidelines will have a major, major factor in the outcome of this game.
Well, I know Rocky's going to show up, and who gave him a chance at Ann Arbor before we knew how bad Michigan turned out to be?
Yeah, that's right. We got Rocky.
I liked the Big Ten a lot better when it was the Big Two, Little Eight, Big Three, Little Seven, or as you say, Bob, the Big Four and little 10.
The Big 13 plus Rutgers, but now it's the Big 13 plus Michigan.
But it's right now Ohio State is so far ahead of everybody else, it makes it kind of a joke. I mean, everyone knew as soon as they played their games, they were going to win the conference, and that's what's going to happen if they get them all in. They are so far ahead of Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Penn State, and all the other former powers that it's made it not nearly as interesting.
If you folks listen to this show at all, you know the truth is that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. They got 5 Chevy locations in Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman, in fact, has 9 locations total, and that includes Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. And Feldman also has Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter. That's in Waterford. They're known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWN. So listen, you buy a fully inspected and fully guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, and then you relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. And as another kicker, they're going to guarantee you credit approval. We know you can find just what you're looking for at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Their massive inventory is unmatched in Metro Detroit. And don't forget, you can also just buy online at FeldmanAuto.com for an effortless, hassle-free experience. And Power Home Solar, we were talking about snow and Michigan winter weather a moment ago. Do you know they're America's fastest growing solar energy company, and they're based right in Metro Detroit? In fact, every one of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels is made right here in America. With solar energy from Power Home, you're going to save money, You'll help save the environment and never again suffer a costly and infuriating power outage from any kind of a storm. Partnering with Generac, that's the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems, you will be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy. Yeah, you're going to lower your energy bills and you will eliminate power outages this coming winter, folks, for good. Power Home even has financing starting as low as $99 a month. So give them a call at 1-800-POWER-90 and you'll save an additional $2,000. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. All right, so we go from this COVID stuff in football to at least one COVID mention in basketball. NBA training camps opened on Wednesday. Yeah. Of 546 players recently screened, 48 already tested positive, what the league said on Wednesday. They can't stay in the bubble. We're not exactly sure what they're going to do yet, but unless they get these vaccines, which they have now and will begin administering soon, unless they get a hold of this thing, man, we're going to be up and down canceled games all season in the NBA and the NHL.
Here's my other question for you guys, and I'm not asking this facetiously. I'm really wondering, and it's this mask issue, and I don't want to get into a political discussion about masks. I have my reservations about how effective they are. But you watch these coaches in the NFL and in college football and in college basketball from the games we've seen. They wear their mask. They're socially distanced on the bench. They get up and talk to an official or player, and what do? They pull their mask down so the player can hear them. So my question is, if you're wearing a mask while you're sitting on a socially distanced chair on the sideline, what good is the mask if you pull it down to talk to your player when he comes to the sideline to communicate? And I've seen this time and time.
How about this, Freddie? You go into a restaurant, even here in New York City, where we have these almost draconian laws as well. You sit down at your table. It's okay to take your mask off because you got to eat and you got to drink. But if you stay where you are and just stand up at the table, you got to put that mask on.
Yeah,
so in other words, I can disseminate the disease by standing up, but I can't do it by sitting down in virtually the same spot.
They've got an explanation for them taking the mask down so they can talk a little bit. And that is, it's allegedly, now this is what they say, Fauci and everybody else, they say that they have 15 to 20 minutes before the disease takes effect on anybody, 15 to 20 minutes. So, and I don't know if the players know that. I have no idea, but I've heard this now a lot the last 2 or 3 weeks because there's been so much attention called to the mask. But you do as you want to do. I mean, that's what this boils down to. If you don't want to follow the rules, okay. That's
not true. In virtually every place in the country, the law mandates that if you go inside an enclosed space,
you must
wear a mask. So it's not. And then there are some of these idiots who like get on an airplane and refuse to put a mask on. And there's a big brouhaha and they call the cops and they get them thrown off the plane. There are some crazies out there all over the map now. I mean, it's a situation where Denny just got his test back. Thank goodness it was negative. Freddie just recovered. He had COVID-19. He's doing fine. I talked with Tom Gage, the longtime Detroit News baseball writer, Baseball Hall of Fame writer's wing, as a matter of fact. This is his last day of quarantine. He had COVID-19, no symptoms whatsoever. Jerry Green, the legendary news columnist at 80, whatever he is, now recovering. It's a whole mess. So, we're going to get through this. Unfortunately, a lot more people are going to die. It's too bad. It's a pandemic, but we're going to get through this and we're going to come out on the other side. Fred, what was more impressive to you? 26 to nothing on a run between the first and second half against Notre Dame, or what we saw Tuesday night in Durham, North Carolina?
Well, I think what you saw Tuesday with the way Michigan State came out, you're talking college basketball, of course, so slowly out of the gate against Duke, and they're down 11-3 or 13-3. And I'm saying to myself, oh my goodness, Izzo just can't beat these guys in the regular season. Yeah. He can't win at Duke. And lo and behold, the last 30 minutes of that game, Michigan State owned. They showed the athletes they have. When you live here and you cover a team and you're around a team, all you hear are all the great things about them. And I remained skeptical because I don't think you lose two second round draft picks in the NBA and stay at the level you were. And I still kind of stick by that because Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman were so good and so important to that team and that program. But what they did against Duke in the last 30 minutes of that game and the way they shut them down in the second half and the number of players that Izzo used in that game that had an effect on that. And Izzo said, he said, I'm COVID coaching. He said, you can criticize me all you want, but I'm going to play as many players as I can because we never know who might go down. Yeah. And that's the reality in sports now, and I think it's wise. So he takes this kid, Julius Marble, who I'm barely heard of. He played 1 minute.
He played three minutes in the first two games.
Right. And Izzo sat him down during the week. And I should say that Marble sat Izzo down during the week. And said, Coach, you preach that if you work hard in practice and you produce, you'll get to play. When's my turn coming? Izzo said, your turn is coming. I don't know when it's going to happen. It'll be about the matchups. And lo and behold, this kid came out of nowhere and had a big game against Duke. I thought it was, to answer your question, I thought it was very impressive and much more impressive than that run against Notre Dame.
Lenny, you got to get with the program. You didn't watch the Michigan State game. You watched that Mike Tyson fiasco instead Saturday night. You missed the Notre Dame game. I don't think you saw the Duke game. We can't say yet, Fred, that this is Tom Izzo's best team because he's already won a national championship.
No, I'm not going that far.
But if this team does win, if they hold one this year, a national championship, and what I've seen, they got a chance. We're going to be talking about what was Tom Izzo's greatest team. I love this team. We're talking about, well, what do they think about point guard? You know, why the kid left and now he's going to the NBA? I got news for you. You know, he signed a two-way contract in the NBA. Rocket Watts is going to play in the NBA a long time. What an athlete. And they got Foster Lawyer. If we live to see this, boys, 20 years from now, I predict that Foster Lawyer is going to be one of the most famous college basketball coaches in America. So they got them filling the point guard role. Wow. These guys knocked me out. They really did both games.
We got to get you a cold towel.
Really? I mean, I'm,
you know, I mean, here's the thing. We got two universities right now that are about to step up and be big time college teams again. State and Michigan. I'll guarantee you one thing. That Michigan's going to be ahead of everybody. He's got some athletes over there that are incredible. And
Juwan Howard's done very well recruiting too. He has guys coming in down the line that we haven't even seen yet. So I think Howard has already put his stamp on that program. And I thought losing John Beilein would be hard to recover from, but I think Howard's done a whale of a job there. I think you're a little too high on Michigan State, Bob. When you think about the teams they've had, I think, and the one name you didn't mention, I'm sure it wasn't because you didn't know, it was an oversight, is Hauser. Hauser gives them a complete different dynamic.
He really does. This team is so good.
Yes, yeah, they're Freddie, loaded.
They've played somebody, and now after beating up on the University of Detroit on Friday night at East Lansing, and then Western Michigan Sunday in East Lansing, now we got the Big Ten ACC Challenge, and they're going to play Virginia. And Joey Hauser's brother, Sam Hauser, I don't know why they split up I don't even know why they left Wojo's program in Marquette. So they're going to play Virginia. That's going to be an example. While Denny's talking about a Michigan basketball team, I've seen every game that went to overtime against Oakland. Oakland University got back into action. Was it last night? They played Purdue Tuesday. It actually was. They lost by 43. So, you know, we look at the Michigan Ball State game on Wednesday night and you ask yourself, okay, well, Ball State's 0-1 coming in. How good are they really? We just don't know. Except we know they lost their opener to Northern Kentucky. And Michigan even let them back into the game. They were playing great. But Ball State closed the first half on a 19-6 run. They're only down 7 at halftime. So from what I'm seeing so far, you cannot put Michigan and Michigan State together because Michigan State is much better than Michigan, and I think they will be throughout the season.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. I'm just making the point myself that I think Juwan Howard will have that program at a very competitive level. Now, whether he'll have them at a national championship level like Beilein did, I don't know. But I think he's made a pretty big impact in recruiting. But this team, these two teams right now, no, there is still a lot of space between Michigan State and Michigan. Michigan State is much better.
I agree with both of you to some degree. But I think that, remember now, season's just starting in basketball. So there's a lot of basketball to come. And I think Juwan Howard, the way he played the game, both in college and in pros, that in fact he knows how to develop a basketball team. And I think you will see some drama, serious drama this year from Michigan. And listen, by the way,
we already have. They went to overtime with Oakland.
I understand, but Bob,
boy, you're down on the Wolverines, aren't you, Bob?
Bob, I'm not impressed with what I see so far.
Bob, I am talking about them as they develop. I'm not talking about them in an overtime game last week. I'm talking about them, you know, once we get into 15, 18 games, then we'll talk about how good one team is versus the other.
I don't think the schedule is helping Juwan right now too much. On Sunday afternoon, I mean, they haven't played anybody. They play Central Florida. Then they luck out and they get to stay home and play North Carolina State. And again, that big 14 ACC championship thing. That's going to be Wednesday night at 7:15 with the Michigan State-Virginia game to follow. And Fred, I'm surprised I haven't seen anybody in the Detroit media talking about this so far. But I was really... I was really surprised by what happened between Tom Izzo and Aaron Henry during that Duke game. At one point, they had a discussion on the sidelines, and we all remember what happened last year that was, I think, so embarrassing to Tom, the national stuff that he took over that. It was calm. Aaron even put his arms around Tom at one point, the way Draymond and the way Matt Costello used to do. And it just seems to me, from what I've watched from Tom Izzo so far this year, his demeanor on the bench is much more placid. He seems a lot calmer.
I think he is, and I have noticed that. I actually texted him after the game the other night about
that.
Did
you? Uh-huh. Really?
But I think the Aaron Henry thing bothers him. I think the cameras caught him screaming at Aaron Henry. He used to scream at Mateen Cleaves and Draymond Green, and maybe it wasn't on camera, but that incident with Aaron Henry happened. I've seen practices, Bob. Izzo is very rough on these guys, okay?
Oh, I know.
But it's part, as you know, it's part of the bond. It's part of the bond they have. They allow him to scream at them and question their toughness and question everything about them. But in the end, he has their back. And I think he's very sensitive and upset about the fact how the national television cameras caught him and Aaron Henry going at it. Now, it's funny that you say that, because the other day, the cameras caught Isaiah Livers and Juwan Howard having a screaming match at each other. And it reminded me of
They were screaming at each other.
Here's the thing, though. Players understand what coaches want to do. And coaches in this particular kind of a situation, they know whatever he says is not personal. It's for letting them how to play the game, teach them how to play the game and getting better and better. So,
in a calmer moment after the game, Livers said, he's got my back. He's trying to make me better. But that's the cameras see everything now, and we'll make a big deal out of stuff when coach and players have arguments. What upsets Izzo, going back to Michigan State, is when players don't yell at him. He loves an animated huddle. He loves when players challenge him. That's part of his special ingredient and quality as a head coach.
He seems to listen more, Fred, unless I'm wrong. He seems to be listening more now to what the kids have to say back to him.
I think he is less of, I'm the boss, this is my team, than he used to be. I think he's less that way. But arguments in huddles and arguments on the sidelines are always overblown by the media. They happen all the time. It just sometimes the camera catches them and sometimes it doesn't.
You think he's as confrontational as he's been in the past?
No, we just said no.
No, just checking.
I don't think he is, but I don't see all. I think that we react to what we see on camera. Mm-hmm. I've watched practices, and I could not even say on the air now some of the things that Izzo has said to his players in practice.
Hey, okay? I've been to Dick Vitale practices when he was head coach at the University of Detroit. I know what you're talking about.
It sounded personal, didn't it? But it wasn't. It sounded personal, and Izzo has a bigger role. He won't say it. Well, he probably will say it than winning championships. He's trying to get these guys to fulfill their dreams. He's trying to get Aaron Henry to the NBA.
Yeah.
He knows what it takes, and he'll do whatever he can to make that kid get to the next level. And if it's screaming at him and offending him, so be it.
Yeah. I know he's disappointed by what's happened to Keith Appling. who has been sentenced to 18 months of probation now as of this week in a drug case in Macomb County outside Detroit. I think many of you remember what happened. He was arrested in February after being stopped by police officers who saw Appling's vehicle weaving in and out of lanes. They pull him over. He was said to be sweating and unsteady by the police officers, and they found a golf ball-sized amount, 19 grams of heroin in a sandwich bag in a pocket of the car. Is this a black eye for Izzo's Michigan State program?
Hell yes, but Fred, it's different.
It's no different than in most other big time college basketball programs. Keith Appling never should have been admitted to a major college in the first place, but he was because he was a great basketball player. This being said, I'm sure you know him. I do not. I've met him once. I just hope that Keith can now turn his life around.
Yeah, I would hope so, and I know Izzo has visited him a few times. I'm sure it disappoints him. I haven't had conversations with Tom about Keith specifically since all of his trouble. But, you know, I don't think a former player who gets in trouble necessarily makes it a black eye for the program. I got to defend him on that. But the kid is obviously troubled. He has issues. His life has no direction. I knew him because I interviewed him, but I didn't know him well.
Right, obviously. I guess nobody did.
Well, maybe Izzo didn't even know him well as he thought.
And listen, the kid had no money. He did what he did.
So you turn to heroin if you have no money?
Well, no, I'm not saying that, Bob. But a lot of people don't have options, and I'm not saying that's even an option. But you know what? People do crazy things when things get real crazy.
Hey, you know, let me ask you a question. Everybody knows who.
Because at one time, by the way, I defined the word crazy.
Yeah, everybody knows who knows about your career knows that you love Johnny Sane. You got along fine with Mayo. You and Ted Williams hated each other. Did you ever have one of these screaming set twos with a manager in the dugout?
With Ted, I did. I mean,
did you?
Ted, you did.
I think I had one with Mayo.
What were you yelling at each other about?
With Mayo? With Mayo, I was because he drank too much.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. One night, and he was just sloshing drunk on the bench, and I was pitching, and I said, "Are you okay?" I said, "What?" He's I said, "All right, never mind." But he had got that drunk. And then with Ted was just an administrative thing. You know, you got your, listen to this. You got your socks too high.
My what?
You got your socks too high. You know how we used to cut the socks and you would slow the white sock? He said, my socks were too high. There were 10 guys on the team that were 3 and 4 inches higher than mine. And we don't know what the hell he was talking about. The socks are too high.
That's amazing.
Well, with Ted and those bad teams, Denny, and you haven't told me this, but he didn't care for you and he didn't care for Kurt Flood. And those were two of the bigger names on the team. I think Ted wanted to be the biggest name on the team, didn't he?
That's what he said when we first got there after I got down there, because the hitters, the pitchers come first and then the hitters come. And when we were standing in the outfield, Flood and I, Ted Williams walked out to center field and he said, how are you guys doing? And I said, oh, okay, fine. And Kurt said something just like that. And he said, I just want to let you know something. I'm paraphrasing here because this was stronger than what I'm going to tell you. He said, listen, there's only one guy on this team. Remember that. You are a supporting cast. You are not the team. Neither one of you. So don't try to take my position on this baseball team.
I would have said, hey, Ted, did you notice that? Did you know that I won 31 games in a world championship?
He didn't care.
Listen, did you know,
Bob,
that?
Bob, I'm going to tell you. I tell you, he wanted me to lose 30 ball games in 69 or 70. I'm telling you, he did 71.
Okay, before we go to the commercial break here, I want to ask you this. We saw two of the biggest a-holes in sports history, Billy Martin and Reggie Jackson on national TV, have to be separated in the dugout before they started punching each other. Did anything like that ever happen at a ball club you played on where two guys had to be separated in the dugout?
Lolich and I.
What?
Lolich and I.
Go ahead. Tell us.
Well, Lolich created a monster. But Fred knows his story about the airplane, about me leaving him at an airport.
We all remember. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was just a BS story. I don't know what he was doing. He had on top of everything else, him and his wife had first class tickets back to Detroit that the Tigers had paid for. He didn't even pay for them. And when I went to the ballpark the next day or 2 days later, I went right to his locker and I said, you are the biggest, starts with a P. I just unloaded on him, and he grabbed me, and I grabbed him, and we fell back into his locker. And I want to tell you, one of us was lucky. You know how they used to hang the coats up there on those, right, those steel hooks?
Yeah, sure.
We both missed the hook by inches. Just
well, did Freehand like jump in to try to separate you guys, or what happened?
A bunch of guys jumped in, and I don't know who the guys were, but Cash was one of them, as I recall. Uh-huh. Gates was there. So, and as soon as Gates or Willie walks up, it's over with anyway.
It's like those on-field brawls. You didn't want to brawl with the Tigers when they had Gates and Willie and Freehand on the other side.
that's a great story too, because when we used to have when we thought we were going to have a brawl on the field, we used to go to the other team and say, listen, because of last night, that throwdown we had, you and I are going to wrestle on the ground when this fight breaks out, but don't throw any punches, none at all. And it worked every time.
So it's fake. That's like funny. Professional wrestling is on TV.
Almost. Yeah. Pretty close.
Hey, folks, we got a suggestion for you. We want you to let Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies help you plan for your future family obligations and your own retirement. Luke's track record of success in money matters and his decades of experience is going to enable him to create a custom solution just for you or your business. So you want to call Luke. Here's his number again, 248-663-4748, to set up a complimentary consultation. And if you feel comfortable, let Luke do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your individual needs. He's ethical, caring, knowledgeable. Again, so experienced, Luke Nowacki at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. And the number again, write it down, 248-663-4748. His advisory services are offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And you know, mortgage rates are still at all-time lows. If your current mortgage rate is above 3%, Hall Financial wants to know why you haven't called them yet. You know, you could be saving money. And currently at Hall Financial, almost 70%, they're saying, of all loans, after they look at yours, don't even require an appraisal. Closing times, remarkably, have now even sped up more than they have. Right now, the majority of loans at Hall Financial are closing in just 10 or fewer business days. So we want you to go to our No Filter Sports Podcast website. You'll see the Hall Financial link there. Just click on it. That's going to get you started. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So, boys, how about this for big news? The Detroit media is reporting that interim Lions head coach Daryl Bevel is a candidate for the permanent job. Mm-hmm. Now, how can that be? The FLs have no GM. Have Sheila and Rod Wood decided to interview Bevel on their own? And what if the new GM has no interest in talking with him? Don't you think this sounds more like in Daryl Bevel's dreams, he's a candidate to become head coach?
Absolutely. I was going to say there, Daryl Bevel threw his hat in the ring. He told the Detroit media he's interested in his job, and all of a sudden he's a candidate. I don't think he's a candidate.
Detroit media swallowed up. Now,
he's got to know the team pretty well, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't mean he's ready to be a head coach.
No, I understand that. But we have a constant idea of every time we want to put a new coach in, they don't have much experience with the big boys.
Now, the Detroit media maven Dennis Dale McClain had mentioned Robert Saleh here Monday as a candidate for the latest head coach of the FLs. But of course, Denny, as this is what butchered the name, listen up, it's Saleh. He's a Dearborn native, graduate of Fordson High School, played at Northern Michigan. And did you see this? Does this carry some weight? I would hope so. Richard Sherman, one of the most famous players in the NFL, plays for him, says you got to give Saleh an abundance of credit, have to give him an unusual amount of credit. And I don't think he's getting enough credit, not just where he is now in Denver as defensive coordinator, but in the National Football League in general. Sherman continued, I expect him to be a head coach next year because he's able to rally men. He is a leader of men, and that goes a long way, end quote. And of course, Saleh would be the first Arab American head coach in NFL history or any other U.S. sport, to my knowledge. If the FLs, whoever's making this decision, do choose him, you know what? You're not going to hear a peep out of me no matter what happens, because this guy has paid his dues. He's well thought of by everybody. It would be an obvious decision to bring him home. I don't know if he's going to succeed. I suspect not. We'll see. And Denny, how about this one? You got we versus we in your lexicon this coming Sunday as the Lions are at Chicago. You excited about that one, Denny?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get too exercised because it's only Thursday, but I will be exercised come Saturday night. You know what? I got Trubisky back in the lineup. I'm going to win with this guy.
I think you are too.
And you know what? He's beaten the Lions every time. He's beaten them four times in a row. So I'm looking forward to a great Sunday.
Well, you stopped calling him the Polish kid. I wanted to check that out because usually an SKY ending implies that someone is Jewish. SKI, well,
my mother had
SKI is Polish. He is not Polish, Danny. I can't remember after I looked
well,
it up.
Well, I'm sorry.
What nationality
mother,
he is, but he's
you know,
not
my
Polish.
My mother was Jewish, and her last three letters in her name were IES.
Okay. Let's back this up a little bit. Would you repeat that, please? Your mother was Jewish.
My mother was Jewish. Okay.
That means you, under Jewish law, are Jewish.
I am Jewish. That's exactly right.
Look, Danny, Freddie, have you ever heard this before?
No. Yeah.
You've known Danny 100 years. I have, too.
No.
Eli has. What is this right now?
Do you consider yourself to be Jewish?
No.
Okay. Did you ever go to temple?
I went to 12 years of Catholic schools.
Yeah, I thought so.
And my father was an Irish Catholic.
That's pretty interesting.
That's pretty
interesting.
You think
you know somebody, right?
And back in the 40s, 50s, that was a serious thing. I didn't know it.
You mean a Jew marrying a Catholic? Well, of course it was. Intermarriage among the religions.
Wow.
Don't you think it's amazing how some people can make so much money? They can be so rich and famous, and they can still be so miserable. So as you saw, the Washington Wizards and Houston Rockets have now agreed to trade two disgruntled, miserable star guards, John Wall and Russell Westbrook. The Wizards also give up a lottery-protected first-round pick. And in the wake of roll-it-out Mike D'Antonio rolling his ass out of town and leaving Houston, James Silas, Paul's son, is now the head coach there. Resident superstar James Harden has said he, too, wants to be traded. What's up with that?
I don't know. I'm not close enough to it. I do know that in the NBA, the way it's gone here the last 10 years is you're a superstar, you play wherever you want.
That's
I mean,
right.
That is one league where the inmates are running the asylum.
Absolutely.
It hasn't changed and probably isn't going to change. They go where they want to go, and so be it. But I don't know. I don't know why Harden is disgruntled. I have no idea. I didn't even know Westbrook was disgruntled. But, you know.
And all of a sudden, I hear three or four people this morning criticizing his jump shot. I mean, the guy's been
inconsistent.
Everybody's criticizing him this morning because he left Houston. I don't get it. I mean, geez, the guy's a hell of a player. He puts their asses in the seats when they're allowed to be in the seats. He does a lot of great things, and he's a star. Why the hell would all these media guys jump on him this morning?
He's not what he was. He's making millions and millions of dollars. They're both in their early 30s now. They said he was awful in the Orlando bubble, though, coming off the previous season. I mean, Westbrook's an amazing talent. We understand that.
Yeah.
And so is John Wall, an amazing talent. John Wall hasn't played basketball in 2 years.
Two years,
folks. So, yeah, I mean, but when the names are this big and apparently they're this unhappy, it's going to get a lot of publicity. And speaking of that, did you notice the Detroit Free Press headline from the other day? I quote, Detroit Pistons' Blake Griffin has 2 goals this season. I didn't read the article because to me it's pretty obvious what those goals are. Number one, to stay healthy because the guy's always hurt.
Always.
He never can play. And number two, to get the hell out of Detroit and away from that organization. Brandon, you're a big Pistons guy. Am I right about that?
I don't know. I'm not sure if Blake Griffin or Derrick Rose want to be here during this rebuild. But, you know, at least this team, I don't know. I'm a little optimistic. I'm excited to see Troy Weaver make a move. So.
Well, wait a minute. Griffin didn't say one of his goals were to get out of Detroit, did he?
I said I didn't read the article, but I know that is one of his goals. I bet you it is.
Well, maybe it is, but I kind of agree with Brandon without knowing all the characters. They've lost here forever. They've been uninteresting forever. They've been hardly worth talking about forever. So if you make changes just to make changes, good for you, because what they had wasn't working. So I don't know all these new guys coming in, but I know he's made a ton of moves.
And you know what?
Like every other day he makes a roster move, and I say, if you're going to lose with those guys, you might as well lose without them.
And you know what? The biggest problem I see with the ball club, talent, set that aside for a second, the team has no personality. None whatsoever. There isn't anybody you can go to for a story, have a couple of jokes with, cut some commentary. I mean, it just doesn't exist.
That's a good point.
That's a good point.
Maybe Blake Griffin's as close as it gets to that, right? But it's hard.
Yeah,
to
I was
talk
gonna
to
say Griffin would be their identity, and he may be a former Piston soon, so who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that goes to the problem with the Tigers. Who is the personality of the Tigers?
I was just going to bring that
up. Who's the identity of the Tigers?
I don't know anymore. There's 70 or 80 people out there that are free agents. And I don't hear one word of the Tigers trying to go get some of these guys that are players. I mean, real players. And I just don't get it. So I'm going to go back to what I originally said a long time ago, Bob, is I think they're cleaning it up because they just fired a whole bunch more people about a month and a half ago. I think they're cleaning it up to sell the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, you've been saying that for some time. Now, this was going to go in the mailbag today, but I'm going to use it now because you guys kind of got into the subject. Our regular listener, one of many, Mike Rizzo, tweeted me just this morning. He says, "Hi, Bob. I hope to see this before No Filter Sports is recorded today so you can ask the gang this question. With the Cubs letting Kyle Schwarber go, surprisingly, renouncing him, saying they're not going to resign him, should the Detroit Tigers go after him?" Now, let me give you a little background here. One of the baseballreference.com writers, and Brandon follows this stuff very closely too, saying he follows this stuff extremely closely. And he writes, I'm quoting him here, "It seems like almost everybody had a down year in 2020 offensively, and Schwarber was no different, slashing just 188, 308, 393. Still, his arbitration estimate salary was only going to be $8 million for 2021. With the possibility that the DH could be in the National League to stay now, the Cubs cutting Schwarber loose seems to be a bit of a surprise. Even if the Cubs felt his fielding was questionable, the crack of his bat often left no doubt what his primary role on the Cubs was, and he's averaged over 30 home runs a year. Brandon, should the Tigers sign Kyle Schwarber if he would want to come to Detroit?"
I don't know. I mean, I don't really think that he would be that great here. And the reason being is this is a guy who's never hit over 250. That's fine. He does have some pop. He's only 28. But we already got a guy where if you stick him in the outfield, he's just going to sit there. That's Miguel Cabrera. Miguel Cabrera is the designated hitter. That's all I would want Kyle Schwarber for right now, is to be a designated hitter, personally.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think they already have their DH in Schwarber. You know, somebody called him a legend in Chicago today.
Well, because of his World Series performance. Yeah,
because he had a big World Series. Yeah. But I don't – a legend is Billy Williams. A legend is Ernie Banks. A legend is Ferguson Jenkins.
And with that, we got a lot more on this, but we have to say goodbye to our radio listeners down in Toledo. As always, thanks a lot, guys. Thomas Wilcher coming up, our mailbag. Stay tuned. You can find the rest of the show on our website, nofiltersportspodcast.com. So to continue with the issue of the Tigers and free agent signings, I mean, you look at their outfield right now. I mean, Jacoby, I would think, is going to be healthy. He's going to be the everyday center fielder, don't you think? And who's playing center field then?
I think they could upgrade from Jacoby Jones.
I don't think Jacoby will. I think he's going to get a shot this year, but not from the beginning. They'll put him up there sometime during the season and see how he's doing, if he's having a good year, either in AAA or AA. But I suspect that he won't start the season with the big club.
Here's the guy on the free agent list that I want the Tigers to sign. Who? Not that he's a superstar. He's not Nolan Arenado. But I think he's a realistic guy for the Tigers, and they have a need in the outfield, and that's Jock Peterson of the Dodgers. Oh. Jock Peterson isn't a big name, but he's a leader. He's a terrific player. He's a hustler. He could give that team an identity. And you'll fit him where you want in the outfield, and we'll see how that plays out. But I want the Tigers to sign
Jock
Peterson.
You spent time in Southern California, Fred? Have you ever spent time?
Only on visits.
Well, I've lived out there.
No, I've never lived there.
If you figure that with the money these guys make, the kid probably has himself a hell of a townhouse in Malibu overlooking the ocean. Maybe he's dating a Hollywood starlet or two. Everything going pretty well for him out there. How would you like to come to Detroit? How would you like to come to the glamour capital of the country, Detroit?
Well, except he's lost in the shuffle in L.A.
Bob, get his number. I'd like to call him and find out who the star is.
Brandon wants to say something.
I see Jock Peterson as Kyle Schwarber 2.0. And the reason being, same age. Both have neither hit over 250 in their career. I mean, let's not forget that Jock Peterson was benched a lot and didn't start a lot of games last year because he was hitting 190 under the Mendoza line. So, yes, he also does have pop, and he's coming from a team that just won a championship and everything. But I don't know. I don't see this kid as being an everyday player after a couple of years.
I think he can be an everyday player with the Tigers. He's with the Dodgers. Well, I mean, he gets buried among...
If you're just going to start calling out center field, free agents. Why don't you go for George Springer, a guy that A.J. Hinch has already, coached?
Don't think that because you get a bad player who hasn't played a lot is going to be a star in his next move. I mean, that just doesn't happen. Bad hitters are bad hitters.
And I'm not putting Arenado and Springer and those guys in the reality realm of the Tigers, Brandon. I don't think they're going to pay for that kind of money for those kind of guys. So that's what I'm saying.
Don't either.
I'd go for the next tier. And this guy can be a leader, and he can improve the ball club. The Tigers aren't going to make a major free agent signing splash. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they surprise me and sign. Obviously, I'd rather have George Springer than Jock Peterson.
Absolutely.
My point is, I'm talking about the realistic of their purse strings, and if Denny's right about them selling the team, they're not going to sign a George Springer. I think that's a realistic signing, and I don't know that they're going to go after the big boys.
How about LeMahieu? Is he a free agent?
Yeah, he is, but the Yankees want him back.
Oh,
yeah.
They do.
See, Denny, that's the only kind of guy, if you're talking about major free agents, you'd have a
chance.
That's
what I want.
Because he's from Detroit. Because he's from Detroit.
Denny
may be from Chicago originally, but he is a Detroiter. And the rest of us are originally Detroiters. Yeah. We know what a great place Detroit is to live. We know how great the people are. We know how great the music is, what there is to do. But unless you're the Detroit Red Wings, which is a glamour location for free agents, if you're the Lions, if you're the Pistons, especially in the wintertime for the Pistons, or if you're the Detroit Tigers, who wants to come? And the teams aren't very good either.
It's always been a problem.
Absolutely.
It's going to continue to be a problem. But if you bring a couple of stars in, one or two, and build, and you've heard me say this before, and build around them with good pieces of people, you got a shot at turning this around in 2 or 3 years. But
well, I don't know about that quick, Denny. I think to turn it around, you have to get somebody to sign and others will follow. Like Pudge Rodriguez in the 2000s.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, Freddie. Right. I'm talking about getting a LeMahieu. I'm talking about finding somebody like those guys, those elite guys who can really play the game. That's what I'm talking about. If you bring one of those guys and you bring Babe Ruth in, everybody will want to play here. So that's what I'm trying to say.
I don't think Babe's got it anymore. I don't think he really does.
You don't think so?
No.
I know he can't run much.
I got one more question about this, fellas. If Schwarber were, in theory, to sign with the Detroit Tigers, they'd use him in left field. Now, you see that they've tried Kristen Stewart out there. To me, that experiment is over. I don't think he's a big league hitter. And they got Victor Reyes, who's looked pretty good so far. Whether he can stick in the big leagues, I don't know. But it seems to me Schwarber might be an upgrade over those guys. Look, I don't know. It's not my job. It's a hard enough job to do that.
Well, Victor Reyes could probably play center field and put Schwarber in left. And I, Jacoby Jones is, I know he had a little spurt there before he got hurt. But I've seen a lot of Jacoby Jones in 3 years. And a lot of it read 210, striking out a lot. Yep. I know he had a nice run before he got hurt. I'm not convinced Jacoby Jones is a major league player yet either. I think they can do better than Jacoby Jones in center field. Terrific defensive player. I get it. But they need offense. And your up-the-middle positions have to produce some offense. Catcher, shortstop, center field, they have to produce some offense. They can't just be good defensive players.
And the first thing they got to do is straighten out their pitching staff. That's they haven't got one yet.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with that. Now, we don't know what's going to happen here, and we don't know what's going to happen with this either. It may be December, but you know what, guys? We still have another 3 weeks or so before our nominations for Moron of the Year must come to a close. We have a late entry from just this past weekend. TMZ Sports says that when Mike Tyson was on his way out of the Staples Center following his cream puff bout with Roy Jones Jr., a guy in the crowd of fans swung at Tyson. You see this Tyson signing autographs. This guy yells at him and asks why Tyson won't fight him. Mike reportedly jokes with the idiot and said it probably wouldn't end too well for him. So the guy throws a punch and allegedly reaches into his waistband for what Tyson's team thought was a weapon.
Oh, my God.
And his entourage reportedly recognized the man from a previous signing where he started trouble. They stepped in immediately, took him away. I mean, Mike Tyson may be 54, but I could think of a lot better guys to throw punches at.
Yeah, I don't. Denny, you really watched that fight?
He paid for it. Brandon watched it, too.
Yeah, I watched it. I found it very entertaining. The first ones were very entertaining. The first one with the Marine, he took a beating like I've never seen before, and I guess That's the reason he's a Marine, because he can take a beating. But the other one,
you watched it because you like boxing. It wasn't just Tyson, right?
Right. It wasn't just Tyson.
It was a good show, though. It had all these celebrities.
And the next fight was funny as hell, or maybe two later, when what's his name? The
Jake Paul beat Nate Robinson.
Right. Paul just bang. I mean, you talk about people falling flat on their back and out and being carried out of the ring. This was the ultimate picture of someone getting the hell kicked out of them quick.
When the three of us were much younger, there was no more famous name in sports in this country. A name Brandon and people his generation do not know. Name of a man who unfortunately just passed away. And I'm talking about Rafer Johnson. Who carried the American flag into Rome's Olympic Stadium in August of 1960 as the first black captain of the United States Olympic team and went on to win a gold medal in that memorable decathlon duel. Now, this was the 60 Olympics that catapulted Muhammad Ali, then Cassius Clay, to fame as well. So he died the other day in L.A. where he was living as 86. He never competed again after that decathlon triumph. And in case you've forgotten, Rafer Johnson became a goodwill ambassador for the United States and was a close associate of the Kennedy family, taking a leadership role in the Special Olympics, which were championed by the Kennedys, and he joined Robert F. Kennedy's entourage. You know what happened next? 1968, he's with RFK when RFK was assassinated Sirhan Sirhan. It was Rafer Johnson who risked his life by jumping into the fray in attempt vain, of course, to save Robert F. Kennedy. He wrestled the gun away from Sirhan Sirhan. And I didn't know this about Rafer Johnson. You guys remember the great San Francisco 49ers defensive back, Jimmy Johnson, Rafer's brother.
I didn't know that. Right. I tell you what, though, when you talk about these names, and Eli does this day in sports, and Bob, you've brought up a lot of names on this program when I've filled in. This is going off the subject, but I've never wanted to be a day younger. I think we lived a great era of sports. Yep. I mean, the people that we saw in my case, the 60s and 70s, Denny, maybe yours includes the 50s, but you talk the 60s, 70s, and 80s. That is the heyday of American athleticism. I mean, you talk in every sport. I've never wanted to be in another era. I know I miss Jackie Robinson, and I know I miss some of the stars of the 50s, but the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and the people that we got to see. I mean, growing up watching Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, and growing up and seeing Sandy Koufax, who I just made, and Dennis McClain, and Bob Gibson, and the great baseball players, the 1971 All-Star Game at Tiger Stadium, the great football players we've seen over the years. I've never wanted to be in another era. I feel bad for people who miss the 60s and 70s.
They actually have a name for that. It's called the Golden Era of American Baseball.
There you go.
When baseball was our national pastime. And I remember when I was a kid growing up in suburban Detroit, we would take an orange or red bright rubber ball so we could find it in 3 feet of snow. And at recess, we went outside and played baseball in January and February. And then, of course, baseball, as we know, has been surpassed by the NBA, by the National Football League especially. It's not like it was. We were very lucky to have experienced that era.
Yeah, I extend it to the golden age of sports, because you talk about the football players and the boxers I mentioned and hockey players. I mean, in our lifetimes, we saw Gordie Howe, Wayne Gretzky, and Mario Lemieux. Yeah, in our lifetimes, we saw Bobby Orr, who was the best of them all.
You know what we had? Every sport had personality.
Unbelievable.
Every one of them.
Yeah.
We saw Jim Brown and Barry Sanders.
I mean, I don't want to sound like a bunch of old men why in my day sitting around. So I want to tell people about something. Here's another thing we do know.
I'm sorry.
We know who you are out there. We know our audience. We know most of you guys are old and over 45 and over a lot more than that. And we know that just like me, you can't even see your phone without your reading glasses on. So that's why so many older people, 45 plus, have been getting multifocal lens implants from Dr. Yaldo. They enable you to see the tiniest of print and also see perfectly at a distance. It is a life-changing and a lifetime-lasting procedure. Eli's had it done and he swears by it. Now, for people like Brandon who are under 45, they are still opting for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo. This is the most precise in the world, they say. It enables them to throw away those annoying contact lenses and glasses, and in most cases, get better than 20/20 vision. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. So we want you to get a free evaluation. Costs nothing. You find out which procedure is going to change your life in ways you can only imagine. Call 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com and tell them No Filter Sports Podcast sent you. You'll get $1,500 off the regular price. Finally, Star Lincoln is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership, a family business started half a century ago by Hoot McInerney, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist. The five-star reviews have poured in. The Star makes buying or leasing a car during the pandemic efficient and easy. One woman even wrote, "I just bought a Nautilus online from Star. It was super easy, delivered to my home, and they sanitized it right in my driveway." Everybody in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. And in buying a Lincoln at Hoot McInerney's Star, you're going to find both the buying and service elements to be a hassle-free and as effortless experience as is possible. So why not drive the Star of American Auto Luxury? Make an appointment today at 248-354-4900 or make it real simple and just buy it online at starlincoln.com. Time now for the mailbag, folks. Denny's favorite part of the show, but only when he's included personally. So we'll see what he has to say about some of this today. And I got a good question for Denny in here. You can tweet him at MU2Denny. You can tweet Fred Human at UncleFred6 or me at Bob Page Sports. We had so many things to discuss on Monday that Eli Denny and I didn't have a guest. So Jeff Schroat tweeted us, "As much as I appreciate all your great guest interviews, I did enjoy Monday's show. You guys covered a ton of topics with your usual insight and hilarity. And Zerat even seems a tad less cranky without a guest. That being said, keep those cool interviews coming. And I think you'll enjoy Thomas Wilcher coming up here, Jeff." Interesting topic here for all of us who are from Michigan, and this comes from Daniel McInally. He says, "My top three favorite Tiger games over my lifetime, 1968 World Series Game 7, the 84 Final World Series game, and August 6, 1973, Tigers versus the Yankees. It was the NBC Game of the Week. The great actor George C. Scott was in the booth. Obviously, it had a few pops. It was very vocal and animated, which made for a great game to watch." I kind of remember that, actually. So, Fred, your three favorite Tiger games.
Three favorite ever? Wow.
Probably 68, 84. You have to put those two in there.
I'm going to say in no particular order, off the top of my head, the night Mark Fidrich beat Baltimore. And I'm not even talking the Yankees.
I was about the Yankees. Okay.
I wasn't at the Monday night game. I watched that on television. But I went after that when they played Baltimore and Reggie Jackson was in right field. And they went out to the stands when they were back when Bird pitched. They had the third deck up there. And Reggie just playing to the fans, shrugged his shoulders and said, "I can't hit him." I'll never forget the people chanting, "Go Bird, go, go Bird, go." My dad took me to that game in 1976.
I would say,
certainly the 84 game, the Gibson home runs, which I was not at either. But I would say that would be certainly top three. And, man, I got to say September 17th, 1968, never mind the World Series, the night Don Wirt hit the single to right center field and Al Kaline scored. Off the top of my head, those are my top three.
Danny, would those be your top game? Well, two of your top games, at least, for sure. And as well, you know, obviously winning your 30th game of the season, which we'll never forget having watched it on TV.
Well, I think there's one game I pitch in the big leagues that I it was the perfect game for me. And it was early in my career. I was, I think, 19 or 20. And I got into a pitching match with, I can't even think of his name right now. But anyway, we go nine innings and we played eight innings in an hour and 40 minutes. I'll never forget it. Hour and 40 minutes. We were going to get out of there in less than 2 hours. And in the bottom of the eighth, Don Demeter, remember the name Don Demeter?
Well, of course, he was for Bunning in 64.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'd given up one hit, and the other guy who was pitching had given up a hit or two. And lo and behold, Don Demeter come up in the bottom of the eighth. The other guy walked a guy, and then Demeter came up and hit a two-run homer. I'd struck out like 13 or 14 that night, but I threw like 85% strikes. And I'll never forget the game. Never forget it as long. I mean, that was before Johnny Sain, by the way.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I remember Don Demeter very well. But you know what? Yeah. Something maybe you guys didn't think about. I wonder how you feel about this. Among my favorite Detroit Tiger games ever would be my first Detroit Tiger game ever. May of 1959, my daddy took me to Tiger Stadium, Briggs Stadium, and we saw a doubleheader with the Yankees, that famous doubleheader where Charlie Maxwell hit three home runs. First time you walked into a major league ballpark, probably Tiger Stadium. Danny, in your case, it wasn't. You saw the expanses of green, something that just stays with you forever.
It does. It does. It was an impressive facility. Not anywhere as impressive as this elephant downtown right now. It's a beautiful ballpark. I mean, you can't.
I like it. A lot of people don't. They don't like the sight lines.
I really like it. I like the suites. I like the food. I mean, everything there is for entertainment purposes. And if you're going to want to be entertained, that's the place to go during a summer night.
Yeah. Adam Korick makes a good point on the mailbag about my asking both Denny and Brandon, who, as we've already said, had poor taste enough to watch it, who actually won the Tyson Jones fiasco, which ended in a draw. Well, Adam says, I'm not sure if any of you guys were aware, but there were no judges for that fight. I don't believe the Athletic Commission sanctioned the bout officially. Either way, no judges were sent, so it would be a draw no matter what happened.
Well, there was a referee.
No judges, though.
Yeah, there was a referee. And
right. Well, there has to be.
And the other thing was the guy he was fighting, he kept grabbing Michael.
Roy Jones, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He just kept him. He after the one and a half rounds, he was almost hanging onto his back all the time. So it wasn't very exciting from that point. But when Tyson got a good shot in, he got a good shot in.
Got something good for us. Website submissions, send them here at nofiltersportspodcast.com, or you can email us at asknofilter@gmail.com. Chris Fitzpatrick writes us, while listening to No Filter today and talk of another rough weekend for our Wolverines and Lions, I hear the topic switch to golf. In his know-it-all typical self, Bob drops the golf reference, A Good Walk Spoiled, a book by Dan Jenkins. Stop the presses. Bob Page was wrong. Eli, who is not here to defend himself, but then he is, why didn't you correct him and call Bob out? The book was written, my bad, folks. The book was actually written by John Feinstein. Chris, I'll try never to make another mistake again on this program or in my life. Emulating you. I want to be perfect as much as I can. 760-89-BALLS is a number to call. You can text us there or leave a message. Dave Hoffman says, I've been a Michigan football and basketball fan since the 60s, and this past weekend was not a good one. Michigan State beat a 5-0 team, while Michigan lost to an 0-5 team. And now during the Harbaugh era, MSU has 5 wins when they were a double-digit underdog, while Michigan has no wins of any kind as an underdog. Then he goes on to rag about Michigan basketball being forced into overtime by a weak Oakland University team. But the one thing, guys, you didn't mention, Dave, didn't you see this? That same weekend, Michigan hockey was swept by Notre Dame at home. I do not know how the Michigan women's synchronized swimming team did or if they had a meet that weekend. And last but never least is one of our regular women listeners, Cheryl from South Rockwood. She says, I'm just so disappointed in the Lions for all these years. I'm going to be 50, and I have not seen them win since the 1990s. Can Sheila Ford talk to somebody from the NFL to help direct the team? You know, like a program where she could get some help. Have a good one, boys. Love the show. And how's that? Is that great or what? Do you think powder puff football, not just for women, but for women NFL owners might work with Sheila?
Flag football. In bathing suits.
And speaking of football, we've got Thomas Wilcher of Detroit Cass Tech High School joining us as our guest on the program today. Right out of Detroit Central High School, Thomas Wilcher, Division I track and field national championship in the indoor 55-meter hurdles, three-time NCAA All-American in track at the University of Michigan, but we know him best as a running back for Bo, the Michigan Wolverines, from 83 to 86. He was in the backfield with Jamie Morris, had a pretty good career, drafted by the San Diego Chargers, didn't play in the NFL, but the bulk of Thomas's career came after he became one of the great greatest high school track and field athletes ever seen in the state of Michigan. He has been, and I think virtually everybody who follows sports in Michigan knows this, he's been not just the head football coach at Detroit Cass Tech High School, but the head track and field coach as well. And he has won 3 Michigan State championships in each sport. And Thomas, welcome to the program. You look at your biography, and I got to challenge you about this. Is it true? You were even an all-city swimmer at one time?
Yes. That swimming was the first thing I ever did before. I started to swim when I was like 5 years old. That was the first thing I ever did was swimming.
What were your events?
I did the 50-yard free and also did the 50-yard butterfly. Those were my events.
But I didn't think you could swim on a Detroit River back then. I thought you could walk over it.
The best part about my neighborhood is that my neighborhood, I grew up in where I'm at right now, on my mother's house. Across the street from my house was a swimming pool called a McCaig pool. More than 15 feet from my mother's doorway is the legendary Westside Cubs football field. And in my backyard, right across the alleyway from my backyard, I had a playground. So I had a swimming pool across the street for the summertime. I had the Westside Cubs football field 15 feet from my doorstep. And also had the Boys and Girls Club on the opposite side of the football field in the school that I walked across. So we had a real good neighborhood.
Yeah, you aren't kidding. Plenty to do.
I asked you, Thomas, before we came on, if you still ran, and you said, yes, you do, but I bet your people catch you now, right?
Oh, yes, they caught me. They caught me the last state championship in 2016. I took off and ran for the not to get wet. I fell down. I was running so slow.
Well, I know you also caught the Michigan State game this year and the Michigan-Wisconsin game this year, as well as other nightmares. What is going on at your alma mater with the football program and with Jim Harbaugh?
Well, I think when you're coaching in a pandemic, people don't understand that it's a different type of era in football. And people don't really understand that there's a lot of things going on with these young men other than football. You're trying to get a young man to push through a football season. You don't know what adversities he's going through mentally. And that's one of the biggest things probably a lot of spectators or a lot of sports personalities do not even understand about the game right now. All they're looking at is just the X's and O's and the passes completed, rushing yards, the tackles, passes knocked down, kickoff returns. That's all they're looking at. But, you know, it's more going on with these young men than you really, really know. To understand football right now, you have to really try to understand the person you're coaching. And the person you're coaching, he's maybe giving you 100%, but that 100% is probably no more than 20% because he got a lot of mental things going on. You don't know what's going on in his family right now. You don't know how many deaths he's had right now that's close to him. You don't know what's going on in his family household due to the COVID. People are losing their jobs, they're unemployed, they can't do certain things. And, you know, all these things wear and tear on a young man. You got friends right there on campus who's catching the COVID. You got friends who are leaving and going home. You got to sit in this room all day. It's not like you went to college. When I went to college, you sat in your room, you got up, you walked around, went place to place. You can't go no place. You can't do this, you can't do that. And so the activities there is very limited. And, you know, you got that building and you got your dorm room. You sit there, you probably can't go down the hallway, you stay in the dorm because it's probably quarantined off. Yeah. So all I'm trying to say is that you coaching in a different element. And sometimes you just probably don't get as much out of a kid as you used to get.
Yeah, but if Thomas, everybody's going through this. Everybody's going through it. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. This isn't an excuse for Michigan's failings, is it?
No, I'm just saying that everybody should take in consideration we're all coaching underneath a different element. I'm going to give you a prime example what I mean. So I said, kid is working at 100%. I said, but that 100%, if it wasn't no COVID, was probably about 30 or 40, 20%, right? But the kid who's giving you 100% at Indiana, that's 100% going on all day because he probably have less things to worry about because their town, their city has less of a problem. So you look at where the cases are and you look at how the teams are playing and you will see that some teams are better than other just based upon the area they're living in, based upon the cases also. So you have to look at a lot of different things. So that's what I start weighing in. Even I look at my football team right now, we're very fortunate. We haven't had any cases. And so therefore we're strong, but the teams that had cases, they're losing, they're having problems. And so that's what I notice right now, because you have to shut down. And so it takes away from you. It's a lot more mental in football this year than I would probably say physical. It's more mental this year than physical. And I'm not trying to say that the teams are worse. I'm just trying to say that everybody's going through something, but some people are going through a little bit less than others. And that's about it. That's the best thing. That's the best way to put it.
Well, you guys have been shut down. You were 9-0, right? And you were shut down, at least as we record that. Weren't you supposed to play Belleville in the state playoffs, right? I mean, this has been a nightmare for high school football in Michigan and virtually everywhere else.
Correct. But the key thing is, when we're shut down, everybody else is shut down. But some teams have to be shut down because of cases. So I'm just saying, this is across the board. When we get shut down, we're just fortunate enough that we haven't been shut down due to cases.
Well, you've been affected by the cases on the other teams. I think that's what you're saying, right? I mean, when they go down, I mean, you got nobody to play.
Correct.
How do you turn it around, Thomas? And we don't know yet if your game on the 16th is going to be played. That's still to be determined. How do you get a team that's been off 3 weeks ready to play a football game, a playoff game, in whatever short order you're going to have to get ready? You need to practice a little, don't you?
The most important thing I've learned in football in the last 30 years is that the body is only going to be strong as the mind. As long as your mind is strong and healthy, you will be able to prevail with your body. You have to really condition the mind. You have to condition the kids by not beating them up. You have to condition the mind to stay healthy and cheerful, and you got to keep it on a positive note. You're going to have the negative, but you're going to have a double positive. And you're going to have a double positive, and you're going to end up with a negative. But you're always going to end up with people cheering and talking about the good things every single day. And you're going to take breaks and talk about the good things every single day. And so it's really more or less than just trying to keep a positive attitude, because right now we're going to be playing a different type of element. It's going to be a lot colder. We play in December. Never played December before.
Oh, boy.
Never played that cold at night before. So it's going to be something different right there. And you got to practice every day in colder weather. So the practice is not going to be as long. It's not going to be as hard. So it's going to be a difference in trying to prepare. But what are you trying to prepare for me? Mental preparation.
Hey, in becoming the great high school football coach in Michigan and track coach that you have, what lessons did you take from Bo Schembechler? Do you think about him when you coach? And what did he teach you about becoming a coach eventually?
As I grew older, at first I took the toughness that I already had and I established it. But as I've grown older, I found out that you want to be tough. You want to be physical, but you must be able to reach out there and put your arm around your young man and say, hey, how's it going today? Hey, how's your family doing? And you want to stop your team and have your coaches break down and talk to them on a personal level to where you're mentoring a young man and not talking to him as a coach. You have to be able to really just be able to reach your young men. That's what I find out right now. You gotta be
a that at one time you were a really tough guy and now you have grown into a softer man. Any of that true?
Well, we mellow, right?
We all mellow.
I would look at it like this. When I played football, the offensive linemen were 225 pounds and 240 pounds. Now my average line is 6'5", 310 to 330 pounds.
At the high school level.
Oh my God.
My team right now.
Unbelievable.
I mean, but the key thing is you have to prepare the young men, and the young men have to go through techniques to where they may not have to hit. I may be looking for speed because the guys are so big. You got guys who are little, you may be looking for more toughness, more grunt work out of them. So it's different things that you look for as a coach. But the most important thing I'm going to say again is that you have to be a coach that who can go back and always put your arms around your man. And you got to be a coach who can tell your young men how to say, I love you, and how to say, I love you back as men, because as men, we don't use the word love when we're talking to one another. And we have to start expressing ourselves that way. It's because that's, you can reach a young man better that way, when he really understands that you care about them, and you'll get a lot more. You're not gonna get a lot out of somebody hitting a hammer against a brick wall. All you're going to get is a hole in the end, and you're going to have a lot of bruises on your hand. And then you're going to be like, damn, I just hit a brick wall and all I got was this hole. You got to find a purpose. You got to find a soul in a person so you can be able to achieve the goal.
It sounds to me like you might be just as proud of some of the kids nobody's ever heard of who played at Cass Tech as you are of, how about these names, folks? Vernon Golston, Joseph Barksdale, William Campbell, Jordan Lewis, Delano Hill, Donovan Peoples-Jones, all those guys in the NFL. Those are just the famous ones, Thomas, right?
Yeah. I mean, right now, Cass Tech have 6 kids in the NFL. They play against each other all day. And we have 2 kids getting voted on for the All-Pro list. The rookie right now, Michael Wainu, who plays for the Patriots. He's been like one of the top offensive tackles and guards right now in the NFL. And you got Jordan Lewis for the Dallas Cowboys, who's also getting slated to try to, they're doing voting for right now for All-Pro. It's maybe good that we can get those young men to be voted All-Pro, but most importantly, though, it's good that they can always come back home and reach out and tell all the young men back at Cass what you have to do to get here. Because it's not about the best player. I have a kid in my school right now. He's 6'6". Can run, bench press 400 pounds, dunk a basketball, do everything. But he has the mental preparation to go the distance. And that's it. It's not about your height, weight, and size anymore. It's about the mental preparation. That's what I found out.
You started at Cass Tech. Your first year as head coach was 1997. And you've had tremendous success. I think just 2 losing seasons. Did you ever think 23 years later, you'd still be coaching? Was coaching part of your long-term dream, or did it just happen?
First of all, I did not want to be a coach.
You didn't?
I did not want to be a coach. I think I started out coaching. What happened was I started out being a track coach at Ann Arbor Huron, helping out. I was doing my internship over there as an athletic director so I can graduate from college. And so he said, well, come help my hurdlers out. I said, okay, I'll do it. And so what happened was I coached the hurdlers. One kid got a Division I scholarship. All my hurdlers qualified to the state. My relays I coached, they made all state. And so my coach heard about what happened. And so he came down here and said, you coached them up. You got to come down here and coach us up. I said, coach, I don't really want to be a coach. I said, I just helped them because I was there. So I went over there. I helped them. So what happened? We did great. The team went undefeated and everything happened. Coached a couple of guys up in the track. They made all state and everything. And we did a real good job. I said, okay, I'm done. I said, I helped you out. I'm done. He said, oh, no, you got to keep going. I said, no, I don't want to keep going. I said, in order for me to keep going, I had to be a teacher. I had to work in a building. I said, I don't want to do all that. I said, I just want to just, I don't know what I want to do right now, but I know I don't want to be a teacher. I don't want to do this. And he would call me up, come by and keep talking to me. And I said, okay, I'll do it. So I went back to school. I got my teacher certification and everything. And I came back and that's when I started coaching. I was supposed to go back to Central High School and coach, but the position they had for me fell through. And so I ended up going to Cass Tech because my football coach, head coach, Dr. David Sneed, he was the principal over at Cass and he pulled me in the building over there. And then a year later, I started coaching track, started coaching football a year after that, and just took off.
When you went to Cass Tech, as Fred said, as football coach, I'll tell you what I thought. I thought, well, that's it for Michigan State. That's it for everybody else, because every kid that comes out of Wilshire's program is going to Michigan from now on. But that's not what happened. Even right now, you've got Kalen Gervin, one of the great young players at Michigan State, and he's one of like 3 guys who play for MSU who came out of your program.
Yeah, I also have Jordan Reed. He's been a starting guard, starting tackle at Michigan State since his freshman year. He was there also. He's still there.
And he even sent Vernon Golston to Ohio State. I never figured that out.
Vernon Golston went to Ohio State, and it was a long battle. But, you know, I think the most important thing that I would have to say is this right here. In recruiting, you have to recruit.
Yeah.
You can't let somebody else do your job. You have to recruit. That's the most important thing I'm going to say. You have to recruit. You can't expect. You have to just know that this is what you got to do. You got to know your job, know your element, and you got to be a fighter in your element. And you got to be able to knuckle up. I mean, Mike Weber went to Ohio State. Damon Webb, who was MVP in a couple of bowl games, he went to Ohio State. Mike Weber, who plays with Green Bay Packers right now, he's from there. Vernon Goldsmith went to Ohio State. He was number 5 pick overall from Cass Tech.
Yeah, tell us how Vernon Golston came to play football for you at Cass Tech.
Vernon Golston, he was a kid who came. I just saw him in the hallway, and I asked him, "Did he like football?" And he said, "Yeah." And so once I did talk to him, he came out. He's walking the hallway with a Bible in his hand. He had a Bible in his hand, and all that. Mm-hmm. And the key thing is, I didn't know he was going through something at that time too. I didn't even know it, but the key thing is it just, everything falls in place. He was a great asset to the team. You know, he worked hard. He was like, man, you had a kid that was like, what, 6 foot something, bench press of 400 something, run a 4.6. I think he ran like a 4.5 something at one of the Nike combines coming out of high school, 4.5, 4.6.
He runs away.
Ridiculous stuff he did.
Yeah.
So you've sent all these kids to these big time programs. How much cheating do you see in recruiting? Is it worse now than it was a number of years ago?
I'm going to say this right here. I've been coaching 30 years. I've never been offered a money bag. I never got nothing.
Yeah, but what about the kids? Are you hearing that certain kids are offered certain amounts of money or their families by universities? No. Come on, no. Thomas, really?
Mm-mm. I had Joe Barksdale go down to LSU. One of the national titles. I mean, nobody. Donovan Butte. No, I haven't. I've had number one athletes in the country, you know, various times. My kids got recruited. They just got recruited. I remember I went down to Alabama. I had J. Rue Campbell. I had J. Rue Campbell, Mike Weber, Delano Hill. I just had all these kids on the team one time. We was down there doing a 7-on-7. We had a camp. And I'm gonna tell you how they talked to me. They said, "Coach, may I pull you to the side? May I talk to Jordan Lewis, please, Coach?" I said, "No, I can't talk to him. He don't want to. He just came down here for the camp because he just wanted to be here."
Wow.
And he said, "Coach, just give me 1 second to talk to him. That's all I want to do." They never bothered the young man or anything. That's the type of respect that I was always given with a young man, no matter where I went. Went to Miami when they had Big Mike and all those other guys there, you know, shoot. It was like, man, had Josh. Josh went to Ohio State, started at guard and tackle Ohio State. You know, all those kids were there. They never really bothered the kids. They asked. They would treat us real respect no matter where we went. I mean,
hey, Thomas, let me ask you, do you have minimum requirements for the kids to be able to play football or other sports in the school?
Yes. You have a requirement to get into the school also.
Okay.
You have to take a test to get into the school. If you don't pass the test, you have to appeal to get into the school, and you have to maintain a GPA to stay into the school. Now, certain kids have difficulty times, have problems while they're in school.
Sure.
You have a probationary period also in the school. So it's something to be at Cass Tech, because every kid can't go to Cass Tech. I'm going to tell you right now. But my kids went to Cass Tech. My kid's mother went to Cass Tech. My daughter was a valedictorian at Cass Tech. My son was at Cass Tech. He was a 3.8 student. He was an All-American, All-State kid. He was All-American in track, All-State also. But, you know, the key thing is, you know, it's good. It's good if you can have kids go to a good institution that will support you with the administration. Administration at Cass Tech, Ms. Lisa Phillips, she's great. She's outstanding. She works with the kids. She works with the parents. And she works with the city of Detroit and try to make sure we can get the most out of our kids, always getting finding different types of organizations who wants to come in and use our young men and young women every single day. So it's good to be in Detroit Public Schools. It's good to have an opportunity to reach out and send your kid to a school in Detroit Public Schools.
Bob dropped the name Bo Schembechler on you. More specifically, what kind of impact did he have on you, and how has he maybe helped shape you as a coach, if at all?
Well, I could tell you what type of impact that we made on each other. You know, he worked for the Tigers for a little while, right?
Right.
So I worked at Cass Tech. One day we both driving home. I stop. He stopped. We look over. I blow my horn. He blows the horn. Stop me. We wave. We get off the freeway. We stop and talk and hug. And he said how much he cared about me and how much he truly enjoyed coaching me. So, and that was it. So that was a moment right there. Cause I don't know how any coach would have probably stopped in the hood the
freeway for a hug.
So it was good. He talked about, you know, all the good things about, he remembered a lot about me. So that was kind of special right there.
Let me ask you this. Have any of the big time organizations in this town reached out, like the Tigers, the Pistons, the Lions, or our hockey team? Anybody reached out, or do you ask them for help?
Well, I mean, I really don't ask because there's always a need.
Yeah.
But there's a need all around. And so a lot of times, if there's a need, we will just try to figure out how to get the resources to do it. But we never, ever try to reach out and try to get anything, because there's always somebody else who need more than we need. That's how I look at it. Mm-hmm. It's even like, as I coach the football team at Cass Tech, I don't look for something. I look for something for the other coaches and the other teams, because everybody have a greater need than what I have.
Yeah. Well, you of course, have helped so many people in so many programs. I said on this program, the minute Mel Tucker was hired at Michigan State, if he's smart, first thing he'll do is call Wilcher. He'll call Thomas Wilcher and make sure that he establishes that connection. What have your thoughts been on Mel Tucker?
Well, I already knew Mel Tucker because the starting running back of Colorado came from Cass Tech. Coached him already. So we already had a relationship. So our relationship was mainly just talking about the running back he left and how he was wondering how did I deal with him. I said the same way you deal with
them. You guys go back. Do you ever get any stuff from the Michigan coaches? Come on, Thomas, you're one of us, man. You can't send that guy to state. Come on, you're a University of Michigan guy.
Well, I put it to you like this. A lot of kids grow up wanting to go to Michigan. So you have to do your due diligence and make sure that kid wants to attend that school and go there. Just because a kid wants to go there, it's like the prettiest girl at the dance. She come over there. Guess what happened? You maybe go with that pretty girl.
Yeah, you want to take her home with you too.
Right. So August is one thing, you know, a lot of kids growing up like Michigan. So it's not hard for me to say, hey, would you like to go to Michigan? Where would you like to go? Because my job is to introduce the kids to all the schools they would like to go to. And it's just not Michigan. I think the most important thing that Michigan have with me is that I'm going to always let all schools have an opportunity to recruit my kids. I want all my kids to attend schools in Michigan because I want their families to have an opportunity to see them. Mm-hmm. And if you do not like the schools in Michigan, it's also my job to get that kid out to USC, get them out to Oregon, get them out, you know, had kids go to Oregon. Get them out to where they want to go to. They have to see the difference in a lifestyle also, because you can't just be stuck in your backyard and think that what you see across the fence is really what you want, where you want to be at. It's other places you got to go to, it's other things you have to do. And you have to make sure you want to start at home and then you want to branch out. And then you figure out where you want to go. And I think that, and what I said before, if your job is to recruit, that got to be your job. And you cannot let your job not be undone.
You got anybody you'd like to see as next head coach at the University of Michigan?
I'd like to see someone who's just going to make sure the program maintains and really just try to just keep their recruiting. I think Harbaugh and them did a great job of getting a lot of 5-star, 4-star kids. But I think as me as a coach, if I was to ever coach college football, I will go find the athletes that's going to make my program flourish. I'm not going to go find the athlete who got stars. I'm going to find the athlete who's going to make my program rise to the top. That's what I'm going to find.
How's your relationship with Jim Harbaugh these days? Now, you played with him, right?
Yeah, I played with him. I talked to him. We text back and forth sometime. And, yeah, got a pretty good relationship. Pretty good relationship. Pretty good relationship.
Are you surprised at the struggles he's found there?
Well, like I said, I mean, the struggles are really sometimes you can't control them. You just can't control.
We can't beat Ohio State, Thomas.
Well, I'm nobody talking about.
Nobody else can either.
Well, nobody else can either. I think that I think the most important thing is that, you know, when you look at coaching, you have to look at all the things that make you a great coach and all the things that will make you better as a coach. And you have to look at the things you can do to improve the program as you're coaching. And you have to look at the administration also. As long as you got all those things working for you, you're going to find success. But sometimes you're going to have problems within the program that's going to not make you have success. But how do you keep going? That's really the question as being a good coach. How do you keep going? How do you keep going? I had a team last year. We were down. We only won like three games. And I had to sit down and say, how can I get this team that's only won three games? I think they could win a state title, but they don't believe they can. Next thing you know, we almost make it to the semifinals. I said, Coach, why'd you schedule all the hardest teams in the state? I said, because I wanted to get in based upon points, because I know I got a good team. And we end up beating everyone. We end up winning the state districts and everything. We end up playing in the regional finals. We lost in the last few seconds. But the key thing is, you got to look at what can you do to make your team better? What do they need to get better? It's not necessarily they don't have it, but what can you give them? What tools can you give them? Is it a speech? Is it a time off? Is it a day? Is it just sitting there talking to them? Whatever it is. I mean, the first time I ever won a state title in football, I suspended 15 players.
No kidding.
And we didn't even qualify to the state playoffs yet. We didn't even qualify. We were 5-3. And I suspended 15 players going to the last game.
Why?
Somebody was doing some stuff in the locker room. Yeah. So they chased after this one guy who they thought was hanky-panky in the locker room, whatever. And I said, all you guys who left, all you guys who wanted to be a mob, I suspended everybody. I suspended them from school and everything. Don't come back around. And we won that game 6-0. Jordan Lewis returned a punt. We won 6-0. And the team came back together. I said, either you guys don't play as a team, do you supposed to do, and go on and we put this team back together, we'll be great. But if you guys want to be foolish, we won't win nothing. Okay. We went on a 40-something zip run all until we got into the state semifinals and then went to the state championship, scored 40-some points again.
Thomas, good luck in the state championship this year. If you do come to that, we want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Enjoyed talking to you, man. One of the real power brokers in Michigan high school sports, and we'll be interested to see, because you're not an old man, Thomas, whether you stay at Cass Tech or whether you go get a college coaching job and make millions of dollars.
Thomas, let me tell you how young you are. I've got underwear 30 years older than you.
You don't want to go there. Thomas, thanks a lot, man. Good luck in the days ahead.
Thank you very much.
Great catching up with you.
Continued success.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Thomas Wiltshire, everybody, one of the great high school coaches, one of the great track and field athletes in the history of Michigan. And he's had quite a run there at Cass.
Really impressive guy. And talking to him there, really impressive guy with principles and about what's right. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. I want to wish everybody a safe and happy weekend. And this day and age, as happy a weekend as you could possibly have. And thanks again for joining us back on Monday. Of course, I think Eli will be back on Monday. We hope to see you then.